What's up, Internet? You're tuned in episode 54 of Nintendo Noise, Flipscreen Games' weekly Nintendo podcast. I'm your host, Pete and Bessie, joined, as always, by my very good friends and co-hosts, Mr. Stephen Radford.
Hello, hello.
And Mr. Chewy Plays.
Goodbye, goodbye.
What's up, everybody? I'm back. Don't worry. I didn't abandon you, okay? I went out for smokes and I came back, okay?
Oh, thank God. It's not a Pixel Pass situation.
Oh, my God. He did leave and never come back. Damn, that hurt. I haven't talked about that one enough in therapy, I don't think. But anyway, yeah, I'm back. Don't worry, everybody. I'm here to save the show. Just kidding. You guys did a great job without me. It was a fantastic episode, but I am back, of course, because it is a big week here on Nintendo Noise. We've got what feels like the first Nintendo Treehouse in quite some time. I cannot remember. I probably last summer, right? But, like, dang, it feels like it has been some time since we've had a Nintendo Treehouse event. And earlier today, we got a deep dive on Splatoon 3, both its single player and its multiplayer. And I'd say a medium dive on Harvestella, the Square Enix console exclusive, which is, we've seen it a couple times now, but it's, you know, very much like a Harvest Moon meets action RPG, JRPG, right? town sim kind of thing.
It reminded me of like the combat in the chibi Final Fantasy 15 that I played.
It gives me like Rune Factory vibes.
Sure. That's a great comparison.
Those, but it's like, I feel like it's Square Enix meets Rune Factory.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's probably the best pull. But we got a pretty good look at all of those today. So we're going to chat about all of that. But before we get into all that, let me remind you that this episode of Nintendo Noise is brought to you by our Patreon producers for the month of August. They are, of course, Christian Oliveria, Christopher Valenz, Gabriel Hasselmeyer, a.k.a. Asobi, Mary Berry, Smilky Shake, Wakahula, and Zaid Ida. Thank you all so much for your support over on patreon.com/flipscreengames. You are the realest of the real, and we appreciate your support, keeping this fine show chugging along, as well as all of our sister shows, the Flipscreen Game Podcast, Steam Deck Podcast, One More Thing, all that good stuff. Thank you for your support over there. If you want to go and show your support just like they did and get some perks and goodies, head over to the Patreon, patreon.com/flipscreengames, where you can become a Patreon producer. You can get early access. You can get our weekly exclusive podcast, One More Thing, as well as a bunch of other cool little perks. But if you don't have any money to toss our way, there's a bunch of ways you can get involved. Head over to flipscreen.games. That's our website where you'll find links to our Discord, our email address if you want to write into the show, our Twitch channel, our new second channel where you can catch all the archives of our Twitch streams. We've got a lot of places where you can go and get some good content. So go check it out. Thank you for joining us on another episode here. And let's just jump into it because there's a lot to unpack with these presentations. And I want to make sure we get to everything. And I know that as soon as I let you two talk about Splatoon 3, it's like off to the races, right? So no start screen this week. We're just going to hop into the treehouse. We kicked things off with Splatoon 3 single player deep dive, where we got to look at the world of Alterna. There's a brand new Agent 3, which was the character you played in the previous single-player experience from Splatoon. So it's kind of like the play on the 007 thing where it seems to be a moniker that's getting passed along, and they hinted at the concept that the original Agent 3 is still around somehow, somewhere.
Unlike 007 at the end of that movie where he's no longer around. Sorry, I've spoiled it, but he's gone.
His ass in the grass.
Wow.
Damn.
Rude.
Yeah, yeah.
Nobody saw that coming.
So I have two things to say about this segment, and then I'm going to shut up and let the Splatoon experts talk. Watching this, I was like, damn, I really feel like I have to learn how to play with motion controls, huh?
I thought that, but then like right in the beginning when the guy had just had the controller in his hand, I was getting like sick from like all the micro judders.
Yep.
Well, it was just on the screen. I was like, what's going on?
That's like, why I don't
why
like motion controls.
Why is it shaking so much? He needs to turn the sensitivity down. It was crazy.
Yeah, it was a little intense. Which is
I play with it almost all the way up, just telling you.
You're a Jesus. Nut. You're a nut, dude.
You got to watch your wrists when you're playing like that.
I mean, I guess. Yeah, I don't know, man. Like, I already got wrist problems. What am I supposed to do?
Don't make them worse. Turn up that sensitivity.
Great. Awesome. But, yeah, looking at it, it definitely gave me the impression that, like, the right way to play is with motion controls. And I think I'm actually going to play the single player experience just so I can practice doing the motion controls.
Yeah. Yes.
And, like, doing, like, the target stuff that they were showing and everything. So that I can kind of, like, work on my chops there and then head into multiplayer with, you know, not trying to learn how to play with motion controls while I'm getting my head kicked in, you know?
I don't know about that, because, like, Chewie broke the bad news to me in our Nintendo Noise group chat earlier this week that the motion controls have not changed. They're identical. They're only on one axis. The stick is only on one axis, not both axis still. So you can move side to side, but not up and down, right, with the stick. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I checked that because I was just like, yeah, I made a Japanese account. Plugged that into my Switch, got into the demo thing a little bit early because I was like, I just want to look around and see what's going on, right? So I logged in and then I went to the motion control settings and then I was like, oh yeah, I am interested in if they change this at all. No change at all, which I think is a weird choice because they could easily, like, let you turn those off or on, you know, like, if you want it all to be motion control, like, turn off the stick completely, or if you want one access and not the other, do that, you know? So, I don't know, Nintendo in general has a long way to go with their options for how to play things, and this is just another in the long line of examples of, like, Why don't we have this, you know?
Yeah, it's a real shame because, like, I play with motion controls all the time on other shooters, like on the Steam Deck or on the PS5, but I only use it for, like, micro-adjustments. So I use the stick for all the big sweeping motions and then, like, a little micro-adjustment if, like, an enemy moves quickly from one side to the other, or you can, like, quickly do a swoop round. So it's really difficult for me to get used to it, not having full control of the stick. But I'm going to persist, I think, this time. The same as Pete, I'm going to go through the single player and see how I feel. But maybe I'll try it this weekend, because obviously Saturday is the test Splatfest. I want to know, before we get into the rest of the Treehouse stuff, which team are you all going to pick, rock, paper, or scissors? Because I know, Chewie, you've been doing a bit of a poll over on Twitter.
I'll tell you how the results ended up.
Okay.
On that poll.
Why don't we do the rock, paper, scissors?
Okay, well, I'll do rock, paper, scissors, and we'll pick the one that we're gonna do, and then Chewie can tell us the results.
Okay. Right.
Rock, paper, scissors.
Scissors.
Oh, everyone loses.
I am rock. Everybody say their thing for the audience.
All different.
Okay, I'm rock, Steve's paper, Chewie went scissors.
I'm paper.
Yeah.
So, okay, in the poll, rock got the first place, 37.2%.
Hell yeah, baby.
Scissors was in second, 34.9%, and then paper was in last, 27.9%. Honestly, that was what I expected it to be based on people I talked to. I rarely heard paper come up, so I was surprised they got as close as they did. But yeah, I'm going scissors, and it's specifically because my nephew just, like, won me over. He was like, I got a text from my sister, and she was like, hey, he wants to give you a call and talk to you. And I was like, oh yeah, sure, I'm available. Call me. And then he was like, hey, I want to know what team you're going to be on. I'm going to be on scissors. I want to play with you. And I was like, oh, this is too cute.
That's so precious.
Yeah. So I was just like, all right, I'm doing scissors. That's the way to go.
What would you have picked if not for that? Did you have one in mind?
I was leaning scissors to begin with.
Cool.
Yeah. And then I was leaning paper for a little bit because one of my friends was like, I mean, you can kill people pretty easily with a rock. Try doing the same with paper. And I was like, but What if I write a really mean letter to you? See how long you live after that.
You go full Karen on the piece of paper, and then you post that, and they're just dead from it.
I always
that'll be emotionally damaging.
As a kid, I always thought that was funny. It was just like, what do you mean rock covers paper? That doesn't destroy the rock. The rock still wins this confrontation.
You mean the paper covers rock, right?
Sorry, yeah. Paper covers rock. Because it's like, what the hell? The rock is still intact. You just wrapped paper around it. Take the paper off. It's all crumpled. The rock has won.
It's true.
Game is nonsense.
It's true.
The scissors smashing up the scissors makes sense. The rock smashing up the scissors makes sense, though.
Yeah, that's the thing, is the rock beats everything. Scissors cannot cut a rock. Scissors can cut paper. A rock can defeat both. That's why I choose rock. The most powerful.
This is the symbol for rock. Heavy metal devil horns right there.
I'm going to start doing that if I ever have to play rock, paper, scissors again instead. Rock, paper, scissors. It's just like, yeah, no, rock, you know? Got to toss up the horns.
But you said you wanted to talk about something else before.
Oh, that's it. No, I just mean I'm going to play the single player specifically to practice. That's all I've got. I'm done. Now you talk.
Well, you're practicing motion controls, which is huge.
Yes. That's the only reason.
Yeah.
Trying to get in there.
I don't know. I can't decide if I liked the look of the single player or not. They've clearly taken parts of the Octo expansion into consideration. There's like these different entry requirement things that they've got, where you can like select which outcome you want. And it will be either like a weapon that's suited for the environment and the level, a weapon that's not suited, like, but you could probably still get through, and then like a weapon that's like completely out there. And you get like, it seems to be the currency you get is the same one that's awarded in Salmon Run, those like egg things.
Yeah,
get.
Those little, I forget what they are. I think they're just eggs, right?
Yeah.
And then there's golden
salmon
eggs.
Salmon roe, yeah, the golden eggs, yeah. I don't know about the single player. It looked a lot like the single player in Splatoon 2, but then there were moments when it was just like, this does look a little bit more puzzly, and the Octolings showed up, and I was like, this is cool, and I could get down with that. So I'm hoping it's a bit more of a mixed bag and a bit bit more variety. But when he was stuck on that ride, like riding the rails for like the sixth time, I was just like, oh my God, no, I just can't.
And that's the thing is, I think the only reason I'm interested in it though is because it was presented in that way. Because like my thought process there is like, okay, well, I'm not going to use this to like engage in the story or anything like that. Like I don't see myself finishing the single player. I see myself playing it and playing a couple levels like that long enough that I feel comfortable, playing the way I feel like I need to play to like excel skill wise, and then I'm probably gonna abandon it. So I think I'm of two minds, or like I'm in agreement of you that like I don't necessarily know that it looks good, but if the only purpose of it is for you to like practice your chops so you're not discouraged going into multiplayer, well then like I actually think I'm gonna use it that way. So if that's the point, then fair play, right? Like that works for me, I guess.
Yeah, so I got the impression that this is definitely a mix of like Octo expansion and the original things. I will say I was a lot less interested in the single player prior to this. Like I didn't care at all. But now I'm like, oh, okay, they're actually mixing up the challenges. Because I think the problem with the Splatoon 1 and Splatoon 2 single player modes, like the base game ones, it's just that they're all very much the same. It's always like some sort of obstacle course. There's some hidden thing of lore in the level to collect and find and read. But outside of that, it's like it becomes really repetitive. The really nice break in the single player in those games were the bosses. The bosses were very cool and very fun. And all of them had like consistently interesting ways of dealing with them. And so to see them actually mixing in more of those Octo expansion elements with this, where it's like, yeah, there are going to be obstacle course kind of levels, but then there's also going to be, kind of just The one he was stuck on. The wire, the zip line.
The rails, yeah.
Yeah, where it's like, that was like an on-rail shooting segment, basically.
Uh-huh. So I like that that's an aspect to it, and I think it'll bring in a lot more variety than the other single players have had in the past. And so for that, I'm excited. And I do think they'll probably get pretty difficult by the end. I'm hoping they do, at least. But it does seem like there's still those challenges that are like, yeah, this is for beginners who haven't played and have a lot to learn about like the mechanics and stuff about the game. And it's funny because, I don't know, you see there's always a lot of like walls that they want you to go up and everything. And I think that's like, I do believe that's something that players need to learn, like all of the inkable spaces and hiding as a squid more often than they do. So I think there are some good
basics. Yeah, but even that feels like that's going to be in jeopardy as well from some of the stuff we'll talk about in the multiplayer section, like the new splat charge is just like, okay, squid surge, it's good. Mm-hmm. Yeah. What did you think of some of the like other things that I don't remember from the from playing through the Splatoon 2 single player, like throwing the small fry to distract other enemies so you can kind of sneak past? I thought that was quite a cool little mechanic that they added.
Yeah, that was new. I mean, I hadn't seen it before. Part of me is like, is this going to make things too easy, or are they going to play with it in a cool way where it's like becomes a crucial part of passing some segments? Because there, some of my favorite moments in Octo Expansion were ones where they were like, that you don't get a main weapon, or you can only use your sub weapon, you know, so you have no gun going into it and you just have to work with that. And I'm like, oh, those segments could be really cool with this little fish guy where you're like, your objective is to sneak past everybody and maybe you throw your small fry somewhere to distract them. So I'm like, there's some cool mechanics I think that they can play with the level design. But I mean, I feel like we have yet to see.
Uh-oh.
Did you lose me?
We lost you for a second there. Yeah, it was we've yet to see.
I was just saying we've yet to see if that's any different or if they've played with it a little bit more, but I think there's potential.
I think so. I think they've learned a lot from the Octo expansion, quite clearly. The like going into the levels and things like that, the different win conditions, mm-hmm. All of that stuff that they've gone with. The fact that you had the same mechanic of like having to buy a number of retries, like they had like three tries left or something, and you can like buy more, I presume, with the currency, which is how it worked in Octo expansion. So it's nice to see all of that stuff come over. We got a good look at some of the weapons as well in more detail. The Splatana Stamper and then the Tri-Stringer. The Tri-Stringer, I don't know if I knew that when you jumped and shot, it did a vertical shot. And then, like, normally it's just like a horizontal
that
shot.
That was really cool.
Yeah, I was wondering if they were going to show that off anymore, because I noticed him do that in the rail spot, and I was like, oh yeah, I forgot that was a mechanic for this. And yeah, I think it's cool. The thing with that weapon is just like, it does not lay down a lot of ink as far as, so I feel like movement's going to be pretty difficult with that one. And in general, I was
that's for the player that I think likes to play with a charger, usually.
Yeah.
And wants that additional range, but maybe targeting a little bit more of a wider target than the charger, which is like a small dot in the screen.
Mm-hmm. But I was really interested in the exploding arrows that it shot out too.
Yeah.
Everything in this, everything that I felt that I saw in this, I'm like, oh man, they're really like upping the chip damage on every weapon. Like everything has like a little bit of an extra effect, and in one way it's like I feel like they've slowed down the kill time for players, because Splatoon 2 is like a very fast paced game and people can like pop up and get you in a flash, right? And this one it feels like even the specials are really focused on like more just doing small bits of damage and then really making players aim and shoot at each other to get that solid kill. Yeah, which is good.
I'm really happy with that, because like if you got someone who had the Punisher and you were just like you were sat waiting to respawn for ever, and then you suddenly come back, and if they were like camping and they got you again, there you go again, straight back in. And it was so infuriating. It used to frustrate the hell out of me. I imagine that's probably still going to be in there, that ability, but hopefully it's the sting's a little bit less if it's causing a little less damage. Mm-hmm. But let's jump forward to like some of the multiplayer section, because like I think the single player was like cool to see, but the multiplayer was the stuff where I was like really interested to see how it would work. So they showed off the new multiplayer lobby and the test range, and that's where we got a real good look at some of the weapons. I love the new test range. I love that one of my favorite guns, the Splash-O-Matic, has a new special with the crab tank.
Yes,
look forward to being able to play that
Play that one. Don't touch the sploosh, play the splash, okay?
I think I'm gonna play the splash, not the sploosh, because it's got the crab tank on it. I'm not a massive fan of the burst bomb. I like the curling bombs, because I lay one of those down, I'll like swim quickly forward, get up, lay another one down, swim quickly forward.
Terrible. You gotta get into the burst bombs. Burst bombs are way better.
Yeah, I see, you're probably right.
That weapon is specifically is one of the top weapons in the game, and it's specifically because it has no shooting RNG. Like every shooter kind of has like you just hold the button and it shoots in every which way. Yeah,
you've
but
got that
one's
box
like
on the screen that kind of shows you where it's gonna land.
Yeah, but the splash is just like straight. It just shoots where you're aiming, and that's why people really like it.
Yeah, I can see why. But the test range was really cool, because like we had something similar to it in Sheldon's shop, where you could go and try out the weapons. But now you can kind of play around while you're waiting for a match. Mm-hmm. And it's a lot more expanded than what we saw at Sheldon's. Like you can try out all of your maneuvers. It gives you like clear like numbers of how much damage each weapon's doing, or like each sub weapon or special or like attack. Like if you're charging it up in the weapon, like it'll show you. You get like little color figures pop up from the the mannequin that you're aiming at. And they had like other things around the test range as well. The copy machine, which was really cool. You could turn on the copy machine. And it would copy and mimic every single thing that you did. So you would you would carry on shooting and it would shoot out. I'm not 100% sure why that is useful, but I thought it was really cool that you could turn it on.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. It seems like a little bit difficult to handle, I guess, because it's like it's copying you completely. So every you get away from an attack, it'll probably also get away from that attack. And then if you don't, it also will. So I don't know. I'm interested to see how it's used. But there was one point that stood out to me in that, and it was specifically that they showed off one of the new, I guess, abilities that all the squids and octolings are going to have. But they showed off the squid roll, which is basically like you do a quick change in direction, hit the jump button, and you have a moment of like, it's not complete invincibility, but it does give you like some extra armor.
Yeah, they worded it as a couple of frames of protection, the guy in the lab coat that was using it, which I thought was really cool. And it made like a shimmery sound that indicated that you were like saved from the attack.
Mm-hmm. And they showed it specifically with the splat bomb. And what's significant about that is the splat bomb is by far the best bomb in Splatoon. It just quick detonation, kills one hit and everything. It honestly needed to be nerfed and balanced a little bit, and I think this is like their response to that, because I was like, oh, you survived a bomb. Like that never happens. Like if you get hit by that bomb in that space, like you're dead. You just have to go respawn again. this was another one of those indicators where I was like, oh, everybody's gonna be like, you got to do some massive damage to get that kill, because it seems like it's going to be harder.
Which is good. And like, there's a lot more strategy that needs to be played out and involved. And maybe you need to work more as a team in order to take down people rather than just going like into these one-on-one firefights. Like there's a lot more that you might need to do. I thought the squid roll was really cool. It's something that you mentioned before. The Julies kind of had that like little dash off to the side.
Yeah.
This feels very different. This is like the turning on a dime. Like I can go straight back on myself, but you also get those couple of like invincibility frames that come with it, mm-hmm. Which really like changes the game. That combined with the squid surge, I didn't really understand why the squid surge was like a game changer in terms of ability until I saw this presentation. And like, oh my god, being able to like hover on the wall and just charge up, knowing that someone's camping up, and then all of a sudden you blast up, you've got like max, you're like maxed out on your ink, and you can just like shoot them. And that was the point where I think I saw your tweet, Pete, and I like replied to it, and I was just like, that was the point where I agreed with Pete, and I was like, yeah, you need to use the motion controls in order to get that motion of like aiming down perfectly once you've done the the squid surge.
Mm-hmm. And I think the reason I push for using motion controls is because your movement is so dependent on the ink that you lay down. And I don't know, it just feels like so much easier to be able to work on that objective while also scoping out other players and, you know, planning out how you're going to approach them. So I don't know, there's a lot of benefits to the motion controls that I think go beyond just like little aiming adjustments. Like even while watching them do the single player thing, I was like, oh man, the way they're just like shooting straight to lay down ink. Like I have a habit of like moving my controller up and down a little bit just to like make a quicker line, like a quicker line of ink. So I don't know, it helps in more ways than you'd expect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I thought it was really cool. I love both of those new mechanics. I'm really interested to try them out this weekend if I can. It's so cool. And obviously then they went into some of the stages, and I'm curious as to, to what you thought about those, Joey.
I'm interested for sure. I think thus far they look pretty good. I mean, I'm sure I'll have to play them to get like a real good feel about them. And there's always like some adjustments that are made as players like play on them, and the team realizes like, oh
yeah, I think it
you
was
shouldn't be able to get here.
Stage. Yeah, main stage of I remember of on Splatoon 2 quickly got like an additional like wall added so you can like jump over and
yeah.
quickly get there.
Yeah, there are a lot of different things that would you know, just adjust for the stages. And the stages all change too in terms of like ranked modes, like different routes will appear. I guess they'll just like make different routes for like the tower control zone mode yeah. and Rainmaker mode. So yeah, thus far I'm interested in them. I like the looks of them. I think they're cool. I think the ones that they're bringing back are especially good choices too. So yeah, I hope they're just like, but I tend to not like grates. I feel like I'd never choose a good time to go over them, and yeah. I just get shot down when I'm trying to be sneaky. So that one that they showed, I was like, oh, I don't know how I feel about this yet. We'll see.
It's just learning them, right? Because everyone's got their favorite maps from the first two games, and I know a bunch of those are coming over to Splatoon 3. But I think from what they showed, there's a nice level of variety between the maps that they showed. There's some like verticality in them. There is like things like grates and different textures and different things that you can move through. And they're also different in terms of theming, which I like, because it's nice not to be stuck playing the same style level every single time. And Splatoon's really good at that. Like even with the music, like every single level has like his own personality, which I think is really cool.
For sure.
And they've added music in the past too, which is fun. So I'm gonna keep my eye out for whatever next Splatoon's CD that comes out. They call it Splattoons. That's what they call it. Yeah.
Yeah. We'll say it's gonna be then Splatthrones, because it can't be number two.
Yeah, I don't know.
Splatthrones
is what I've been calling it.
Yeah, Splatoon. Because everyone used to put the number 2 in Splatoon. Yeah. I don't know how they're going to do that anymore. There was a few other bits they showed that were like nice quality of life improvements that I picked up on. One, I think for me, that I'm really excited about is the sorting of weapons by classes. And I don't think they'd shown this before. The fact that there's now like a nice tabbable area that you can quickly go, oh, I want to see the buckets. I want to see the...
Yeah,
or like the guns, or I want to see all the splash-o-matics or whatever.
While we're on the subject of weapons, we got a question from Zaid, one of our Patreon producers, who wrote in and said, having seen some of the new weapons in action, would you say you'll adopt a new strategy in Splatoon 3, or will you stick with what's worked for you in the past? I know I'm personally very interested in the Splatana. That seems like my kind of weapon. Yeah.
That seems difficult as fuck for like a beginner player.
Yeah, I don't know. I like the versatility of it. Like, I like that it has a reliable long range option, but like there's also kind of like the close up melee, because that was what I liked about the roller, you know? Mm-hmm. So I could see it working with my playstyle.
Yeah, there's definitely some like brush elements to it and roller elements to it. It was definitely them playing it, but I was like, ooh, this seems a little slow. I don't know if it's gonna get the job
done. I would like panic in like close quarters, and I know I would be no good with that weapon. So it's definitely not one for me. I think I'm probably gonna be the player that implements some of these new techniques, like the squid roll, like let's quickly get the fuck out of there and then like shoot them from afar. And I do want to try out the splash-o-matic. I know I love the sploosh-o-matic in the previous game, but my god, that crab tank looks so fun. I just can't wait to be a crab and like shoot things. It looks so good. So I think I'm going to check out the splash-o-matic, and I'm probably going to spend some of my... Because you get special tokens, right? If you had Splatoon 2 or something, you get some to carry over with you. And so I'm probably going to spend some of those at Sheldon's shop and get that weapon straight away, because that's the one I want to try.
Nice.
Yeah. Maybe I'll pick up a Splatana as well. It could have been that specific Splatana as well. That was the Splatana stamper they showed off. There's obviously other variants of it we haven't seen. So it could just be that one was slow, because the rollers are like that. Some of the rollers have additional, they're like faster, you can maneuver around quicker, and they showed off the carbon roller, which is that one where you can kind of move around, but when you go to run someone over, it's like a 2-hit rather than like a 1-hit attack.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm excited to try them all out. I'll definitely try out the Splatana and the Stringers, right? The new bow ones that they have. But I don't know, I've been kind of looking at the list of what's available at during the Splatfest. So we'll have like 26 weapons to choose from. There is a Splatana that will be there, and a Stringer. So those two will be, you know, the new ones that we can check out and stuff. But I used to be a sloshing type of person, or machine, you know, sloshing machine. That weapon just got a little too slow for the Splatoon 2 meta, so I've like drifted away from it and just do the basic shooters, because those tend to just be the best options in a lot of competitive situations. But yeah, after looking at how the game has changed and how the kits have changed and everything, I'm pretty excited. Like the slosher I'm looking at again. I used to really like the slosher, but the hitbox was really weird on it after a while with Splatoon 2. Like, I played it too much, and I was just like, I have so many problems with this weapon now. but I want to try it out again, because now it has splat bombs. It has the ink strike special that looks pretty fun. So, yeah, I don't know. There's definitely a lot that I think will be cool to try out. So I'm going to be playing this game for a long time, so I imagine I'll play every weapon at least a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that aren't they all playable this weekend, all the weapons? Or they're saying it was like a ridiculous number were playable.
It's 26 of them. So like
26, and there's 41, I think it was. Some of that.
What do you mean?
Like, how many weapons are there in total? Is it 26? Is the total?
In the Splatfest, there are, I don't know how many there are, they're going to be in Splatoon 3, but there's a lot. There's honestly, because I think we're getting all of them from Splatoon 2, right?
Yes, and then some additional ones. There was every weapon that were in the that was in the previous game, and then obviously we got the stringers and the Splatana stampers. But it seems like, I don't know if there's going to be variants. Like, is the Splash-O-Matic they showed with the crab tank a new variant? And the Splash-O-Matics that are in the current Splatoon 2, are those two going to be carrying over with the specials that already exist on them?
I guess it would depend. It seems like they are making changes to a lot of them. Like, the Splattershot Jr. is pretty similar to its kit. I don't remember if it had splat bombs. I think it does, actually. But it does have the new Tactic Cooler, which seems to be like the armor replacement. So yeah, it seems like they're going to be as similar as they were. But there are changes to the specials and stuff, so some of them might adjust a bit.
I loved the Incomo. That's gone, is it? They've replaced it with the Tacticooler?
Yeah, the Tacticooler seems to be the new ink armor thing.
Was it just too OP? Is that where they took eggs? Everyone went for the Incomo.
From the very beginning of the game to the end of the game, there has not been a meta that didn't use ink armor. There's always ink armor. It was strong.
I also kind of feel that maybe the squid roll solves some of what it offered. That you can get out of there, but you've got to use some skill rather than it just being active. Mm-hmm. So maybe that's part of the reasoning behind removing it as well.
Yeah. Yeah, so far I'm getting the vibe that this game's like pretty well balanced compared to Splatoon 2.
Yeah, it seems like it. I'm sure we'll have a boatload of balancing updates within like a week or so, but it's really exciting. I actually put my pre-order through today because pre-ordered it, and I was just like, I need this game day one. So my pre-order's through. I can't wait. I'm really excited for September 9th now.
Awesome. I'm excited. We're gonna play a lot for sure.
You're playing with us, aren't you, Pete?
Oh yeah, you kidding me? I'm ready to roll, baby. Okay, I'm ready to roll. I'm very much excited to jump into it with y'all and kind of like be on an even playing field and not feeling like I'm playing catch up. So I won't
see,
be as
I don't
good
know
as
if
you
will but... though, because on our ranks carrying over.
I think so, yeah. If you have some saves from Splatoon 2, that'll cross over.
Is it 1-to-1 though? I thought it was like you get knocked down. Like
there's like a bit of a reset. There.
Right.
A bit
yeah.
Of a reset.
It's like a seasonal type reset, like with ranked in most games, where it'll be like, oh, you were gold last season, so we're gonna start you at silver 5, right, or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
Not that it'll be 1-to-1, but like it'll be a less of a gap than oh, I've been playing for 1,000 hours and I've been playing for 20. You know, it's like okay.
Mm-hmm. So I think because everyone's going to be playing it, you're going to be motivated to play it more, and you know it'll be the game of the moment. You'll want to play it rather than it being us like, come on Pete, come and get rank B- so we can
in
play
this old ass game by yourself. Yeah, and like that was a struggle too, right? Because it was like I didn't know anyone else who was playing it, so I was only playing it with you guys on stream. So the rest of the time, I'm trying to rank up alone with a bunch of other people that are really good, and like you know, it didn't work. So yeah, I am excited to jump into it. Yeah, like you know, Splatoon has always been something I liked a lot, but I never had a dedicated enough, you know, Splat Squad to be playing with. That like it never became a regular rotation thing for me in the way that you know something like League of Legends did for like years or whatever, right? So I am excited to get kind of an opportunity to jump into it again, and you know I think what's pretty clearly a much better version than Splatoon 2 in terms of its quality of life updates, know. So yeah, I'm very much looking forward to it. I hope that it grabs me and I hope that I get as into it as you two and that like we, you know, we're in that, you know, and like, I know Sierra's going to get it as well. And like, it would be really fun if the four of us were like playing it together on a regular basis, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. You just got to hit that point where you're like, okay, just three minutes for one turf war. I can do that. And then, you know, several hours later, you've played a million rounds.
That's what I want. I want to get there.
That's like currently what I'm, you know, where I'm at with like multiverses, right? Like I very much have the like, I'll jump in for, you know, a match or two, work on my dailies, you know, and then it's like, well, I played for like an hour and a half. Okay. so, and I can see that for me here. So, let's move on, because I know we're going to be talking more about Splatoon next week, considering there's the early access this weekend, and boy, if you don't like Splatoon, we've been talking about it a lot lately, sorry. But the other game that they showed off, which, honestly, really weird, was a weird, like, split of, like, alright, two-thirds of this is Splatoon, and then we're going to talk about this Square Enix game. Okay, sure.
Yeah.
But Harvestella, we talked about it up at the top, kind of Square's take on the Rune Factory, you know, farming meets JRPG meets, you know, light action type game. I liked the look of this a lot, actually. It is a, you know, very much like my type of game, you know, like I do like, you know, I like the farming base sim management type games, you know, but I do like it when they have some kind of like angle to them, which is why like Cult of the Lamb is a game that's been working for me really well this year. And
I was gonna say it kind of had that Cult of the Lamb like loop, right?
Yeah.
Where you're at base building out your farm, and then you got to go out and battle to pick up resources and things,
get new seeds, really interesting, like whatever.
Yeah, like really interesting how they manage like time, and like time is like your finite resource, and like every single action you made like took time. Like if you needed to build a bridge, it took like 1 hour, and that's like you have to like watch the time, because if you don't, it does that Stardew Valley thing where if you like collapse, you'll end up getting taken back to town because you passed out and you lose some of your items.
Yeah, and it's interesting where it was like they there's a part where they're like exploring and they find a like a spot where you can rest and regain health and stamina, and it was like you'll rest for an hour and then like your stuff's replenished, and just the way that like it's all about resource management and the most valuable resource is time, which is cool. I like that.
It's like life.
Sure. Yeah. Very true. And I like. The whole thing that Cult of the Lamb, I think, does so well is having each system feed into each other, so it doesn't feel like two different kinds of games just kind of like sewn together, right? Like Frankenstein together. It is like, okay, right? Like there is a natural progression of you want to build out your farm, you want access to better crops or, you know, like resources so you can improve your farm and like improve the economy of it. Like you need to go out into the open world, or not the open world, like out into the exploratory parts of the game and battle monsters and collect resources and advance the plot, because there is like an actual storyline too. It's not like Stardew or like Cult of the Lamb I guess Cult of the Lamb does kind of have an endpoint, and so does Stardew.
A little bit of story elements to them, right?
Yeah, they do, but like they're more abstract, right? They're more a framing device, whereas this, like, there was cutscenes, right? Like there's like scenes where you're meeting characters and they join your party and, you know, and like they're that kind of thing. So it is a little bit more.
I can't believe you're like
JRPG.
Writing off the Stardew Valley granddad, you know, that was the only reason I was invested. I wanted to do good by my granddad.
No, but you're right, because like there is like the whole, like,
I get what you're saying though. Yeah,
it's different, right? Like it's more like environmental, of like make a choice. Do you want to be friends with this person in the town? Do you want to pick this romance choice? Like, and like Cult of the Lamb is a similar thing where like there's a overarching story that you're progressing through, but like ultimately it's about the game, right? It's the gameplay, whereas this is kind of marrying both of those things, where it seems like the base building feels more akin to how it is in a normal kind of like farming type game, but rather than going and interacting with the townsfolk or building out the community center, you're going out and like exploring a JRPG storyline, you know, which I vibe with, you know, like that's an attractive offer to me. And you know, Chewie, you brought up Rune Factory.
What did you think of that storyline though, before we like get too far away from it? Like the weird, like it's an alien coming down from like outer space or something. It was just like, red alien thing?
I don't know.
I'll just say it.
It's like, yeah. I don't know. I can't say. I haven't seen enough, but I'm down. I'm down to chase an alien or whatever.
meet a unicorn, become friends with them.
Very unexpected. Unexpected for a farming sim game.
It's super weird.
An alien come down.
But hey, Stranger Things,
I like
right?
It.
Yeah, I'm into it.
I'm down. I was down.
Tell me your weird story. That's fine.
I think if things get weirder, as things get weirder, the more interested I am. So yeah. I'm there for it.
What I was going to say was, you know, Chewy brought up Rune Factory, and like, I've had that recommended to me several times, and this feels like very akin to that. And like, yeah, like this feels like a good elevator pitch for me.
It looks very similar to Rune Factory. I watched Zaid's, one of our Patreon producers, stream a bunch of it over on his channel earlier this year when it came. I think it was, so Rune Factory 5 came to Switch this year, I think.
I think that's right.
Yeah.
And it looks quite similar to that. I will say, though, like, this looks a lot higher quality on Switch than Rune Factory did in terms of visuals. I think it looks really cool. The menus are nice and clean. Very much reminded me of Breath of the Wild's menus in terms of inventory management. It's got that, like blurry out overlay thing. Quite simplistic. And, like, you know, There's not a crazy level of detail in there. When you go out and you're finding like a sparkle on the side of the road, there is like a level of imagination you need to use, because it comes up, you know, with just text on the screen, like, you found a mushroom and it smells really great, and like, you know, you got to take it home. Like, you don't get to see it, but I don't think that matters for a game like this. I think this is really, really cool. I actually really like the look of the game. I'm more interested in the farming element than the nonsense JRPG storyline. And I feel like the nonsense JRPG storyline is what's going to put me off from checking this one out. But I was impressed with what I saw.
Well, I'm surprised, because you were not interested prior to this.
I was not.
At all.
No, I was not. No.
I think this was a really good look at it, because I was very like, you know, oh, this could be for me, but it could easily not be. And actually getting a look at it, I think this looks really cool. It looks like it would be like a good fun, you know, like I really love a game that has a well executed loop that is not just one kind of thing. You know, I think that's really important to like, for the longevity of an experience like this to not get stale. You know, I think of some of my favorite games, right? And like, I love, like, in the BioWare games where it's, like, you go on a mission and then you come back to the base and you talk to your buddies and, like, that's a way to break up combat, right? Or, like, you know, I brought up Cult of the Lamb earlier, and, like, the way that that juggles between two different kinds of experiences, like, Persona, that's a thing that, like, it does really well of, like, okay, you're in the dungeons or the palaces and you're out and it's JRPG game, turn-based gameplay, and then there's the social sim stuff, you know? And, like, this feels like it's really tapping into a good balance of those mechanics, and yeah, I could definitely see this one appealing to me quite a bit. I think depending on like how much space I have for it in my, you know, my gaming like time when it drops is going to be the biggest thing that decides whether or not I think I give it the time of day that I think it will deserve from me. 'Cause like the whole like seasonal change thing that they talked about a while ago, that was something that I thought was interesting, and like seeing how that will impact both like the farming side of things and the environments, I thought was really interesting. And it's, I know that's something that like I think they had said before, but seeing the worlds in practice, you can kind of get a sense for like how that will actually look now, and it's like all those things seem really appealing to me.
Yeah, I am always a sucker for like changing seasons, and that sort of thing was initially like really intriguing for me. So I was like, yeah, I like this. So I liked it before. I think I still like it now. I think for me, I was like, oh, this is what I expected from that first look that we got, where there's like farming stuff and then there's also battle stuff. But I think it was just like, my initial view of it was like, okay, I do feel like they're probably going that direction with this from like Rune Factory, which I haven't gotten to play, but has also been recommended to me. I've heard 4 is really good on 3DS, and I think it is on Switch as well. 5 was not people's favorites, mostly for the visuals and just some weird bugs, I guess, that people ran into while playing Rune Factory 5. So this just looks definitely higher quality than that. But I will say, I think the crops look kind of weird compared to like some of the other stuff. And maybe it's like a choice that's like, they want them to be like definitely distinct from the rest of the environment. But I'm like, they don't have to look bad to look distinct. They look kind of, I've been calling them croppy. That's how I refer
because
to
they it's because they've been grown with a magic watering wand that yeah. they're an alien crop that's why they don't look like they belong there, Chewy.
You know what? I would not be surprised if it becomes part of the story how they look. That just seems like something they would pull off.
So I have a couple questions for you two, because I think by and large I think we're aligned in terms of this game looks interesting, and I think it checks some boxes for us for sure. Zaid also commented about this and said, you know, Harvestella actually looks pretty good, but definitely not on Switch, though. Do you have any concerns about performance for this one?
I mean, that's always a concern for me, I think, with big games like this. But this is a console exclusive for Switch.
Yeah, it's
and
coming
out
on
like
Steam.
From what I've seen, it looks pretty polished. It looks like I didn't see any frame drops. I didn't see any performance issues. It's clearly targeting 30 frames per second, which I think is fine for a game like this. It's not like it's high action. Yeah, there is some battles in there, but it's not like it's super fast paced. I think it looks great. I think it looks, if you compare this to say like something like Pokemon Arceus that came out earlier this year, I think this looks better. Maybe it's not on the level of, say, Xenoblade Chronicles 3 in terms of visuals, but I think this looks absolutely fine.
Yeah, I didn't get the impression that it was struggling. I might still consider getting it on Steam Deck anyway, just because it might have a better performance, but I also feel like it'll be more comfortable on Switch, so I guess we'll see. I was a little surprised to see the price point, actually, though. It's a $60 game. Are you surprised by that?
No, I thought it would have been a full price game. It's published by Nintendo, isn't it, on Switch?
I believe so.
Yeah, I think it's published by them, made by Square. I think it was going to hit that price point for sure.
It's always going to be that, yeah.
Yeah, I guess that makes sense. I don't know, for whatever reason, like seeing it beforehand, I got the impression that it was more akin to like that kind of like mid-tier game that Square has been putting out the last couple of years, where they're more in that, like, I don't mean mid-tier in quality, like in production size, where they're like more like $30, $40 games rather than like the full $60 kind of thing. So just interested to see what you two thought.
We don't know how long it is as well. We've only obviously seen a little slice of it. It could be a really lengthy game. There's probably a lot of content in there.
Yeah.
And I think in terms of quality, it looks like it's up there. And
I read that I think the intention is for it to be a over 100-hour type experience if you want to invest that in it.
Yeah.
Which I feel like you tend to be able to with farming sims in general.
Yeah, right.
So
it's like
that's just the nature of their gameplay.
I'm looking at screenshots of these crops on Amazon right now because
they don't look good.
It is in the UK. They look terrible, and the problem is because there's no shadow. It's completely flat. So if they add some shadow or some kind of like ambient occlusion or something in there, then maybe it would look a little bit more decent. Because the rest of the environment has like pre-baked shadow, and I guess these can't or don't for some reason. Very weird. Very weird choice.
Yeah, maybe they're still working on that part, but I don't know at this point. I will say I thought it looked
November,
like it ran.
So.
Yeah, it's pretty soon. I thought it looked like it ran well, better than I expected it to at first. I was like, oh, we'll see how this goes. But as far as like, I don't know. I feel like there's always so much compression and stuff over YouTube and just like streaming in general that I'm like, you're not going to get like a really good feel for how this looks until it's actually on a screen in front of you. So, yeah, that aspect of visuals, I'm like, we'll see.
Yeah, agreed. But
Either of you think you're going to pick this up day and date? They're like, you know, October and November are looking really packed. We've obviously got Splatoon in September. And, you know, there's Dragon Quest Treasures coming to Switch in December. We've got Pokemon in November. There's a lot coming out.
Yeah. And I think that, unfortunately, is the thing that's going to gonna get in the way for me is like, I am definitely interested in the game, but I think the double whammy of there being a ton of other games on Switch around it that I'm already interested in, and it being a $60 experience when I thought it was going to be a little bit more budget, I mm-hmm. don't know if I'm going to be able to fit it in my gaming budget around that time, let alone find the time for it, you know, because you know, you just name dropped how many other games that are right around it on Switch. And then there's also, you know, a couple games outside of Switch, right? Where like God of War Ragnarok comes out like 5 days later.
Yeah.
And like, yeah, that's a high priority one for me, right? As a fan of like the third person action type game and really love the original. So it's like, I feel like I'm going to want to pick that up and try to finish that before Pokemon comes out rather than take a gamble on this game, right? Because it's like, that would be, if I just buy those three games, and those aren't the only three games I'm interested in around that time, that's already, you know, a lot of money, right? Like, that adds up mm-hmm. pretty quickly. So I feel like if anything, I'm more likely to try this one later. Like if I can swing back to it during a quiet period, maybe if it's on sale, something like that. But, we know how often that intention goes to, you never play it, which is yeah. a shame because it does look cool.
Yeah, I'm definitely interested. But it's probably going to be one that just becomes like wait for a sale for me, because even like I'm looking at what's upcoming right now, Ooblets is a week from today, which is yeah. going to more than satisfy that for me. I think Potion Permit is at the end of the month as well, which will be cool, kind of along those lines.
We talked about starting Persona 5 Royal together and playing it for like a yeah. game club, and like that's out like 2 weeks before this, so it's like I don't know if I'm gonna have time for it,
yeah,
which is a bummer. Saying, like, I like this presentation.
There's a lot of I just think there's a lot of like games that are kind of going down this alley that are honestly, you know, they're indie games, they're a little cheaper, but I imagine they'll satisfy that same need for me right now. So I'm like, it'll be one that I wait for a little while. And I feel bad because I think Square is also kind of running into that with games for me, where I'm like, cool, Triangle Strategy, terrible name, love tactics-based games with obtuse storylines like that. But I don't know. There's a lot of tactics games coming out that are also cheaper.
With,
yeah,
same deal with Diefeld Chronicle that we spoke about last week. That no one realized there was a demo available for and hadn't checked out, and that's out on the 20th of September.
Yeah, it's soon. So I feel like they're putting out the games and the styles that people want, but I think there's a lot of options for those types of games right now.
Square needs to start like holding on to games and looking at the release landscape and just like pausing for a little bit sometimes, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe. And I mean, this does have the benefit of being Nintendo exclusive, so I think that will appeal to a segment of the audience, right, that like likes this kind of game and he's primarily a Switch player, right? Like that definitely does give it a bit of a boost, I think. But yeah, I don't know. Mm-hmm. Like I could see this one come out and struggle because it's just such a crowded fall right now. Like I was thinking about this the other day after Steve and I recorded the Flip Screen Games podcast earlier this week, and we were talking about kind of the game of the year landscape and how much it's changed since earlier this year when we discussed it, and how it's like such a stacked back half of the year. And it really reminds me of like 10 years ago. When like back like I think, again, it's an easy thing to forget, but do y'all remember, like, in the pre, like, before Dying Light came out? Like, video games didn't come out at, like, any other time of year besides, like, from August to December. And then it was, like...
We always had that mid-tier lull. I do remember, like, we had the early year blockbusters. We did get those, pretty frequently.
But that was a thing that didn't really happen before, like, the PlayStation... Like, not never, but, like, the big blockbuster games came out in the fall. And, like, you'd get the odd...
That's still the case.
Sure, but not as much as it used to be. I mean, think about it, right? Like, we've had a couple, like, Zelda, both Horizon games, right? Like, The Last of Us, Ghost of Tsushima, like, they all came out in the first half of the year. And, like, that's not uncommon anymore. But this year, it feels like it's, like, we got, like, three-ish, four-ish big games at the beginning of the year, and then it was dead for months. And then now it's like, oh, my God, there's an overwhelming amount of video games coming out between September and November. It's crazy. It's like everybody's trying to get in for that Game of the Year consideration before the Game Awards or something.
Yeah.
And I'm looking, and a lot of these games that are winning Game of the Year are coming out in March these days. So, and we're seeing that happen again.
Probably. Yeah,
this year's came out in February.
Yeah, it's like unless God of War disrupts that in some way. Yeah, right? Like that's probably Game of the Year is Elden Ring. So like, it's interesting.
I thought you were talking about Pokemon Legends Arceus.
That's right. That's an intellectual's opinion, Chewie. I appreciate that. I appreciate it.
That was January, actually.
That was the game of January, that's for sure. It's on my short list.
It was the game of the year for a good minute until Elden Ring came out in February.
Yeah. Yeah, kind of disrupted things a little bit. But it's I think this game is unfortunately timed. I really wish it had come out a little earlier this year during that quiet period. And the fact that I am playing Cult of the Lamb, which is like very similar. I don't know that I'm going to feel the need for this game while it's hot. And I worry that once it's in the rear view, it'll be like, well, oh, well, you know.
And I mean, honestly, I don't know when they'd hold it to even because thinking of like spring, I'm like, that's Breath of the Wild 2 time. Nobody's going to play anything else when that comes out.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's rough.
But
just make it cheaper. $40.
Yeah, I think that would have helped quite a bit. But I will say, regardless of those reservations about, I guess, its success, I did really like the showing, and it went from being a game that I really wasn't on my radar in a big way to one that... I actually think looks really good. So I do think this was a good showing for it. I think it's kind of unfortunate they haven't shown more footage like this during a direct that will get more attention rather than the treehouse, which, you know, the hardcore folks are going to tune in for, but it's a much looser format. It's, you know, how many people watched the Splatoon stuff and then bounced, right? Like, so
yeah,
it's unfortunate. I feel like this game needs a bump. And I don't know that it's going to get the one that it needs, but, you know, hope I'm wrong. You know, I hope it comes out and turns some heads because I do think it looks pretty promising.
Agreed.
All right. So I think we're going to wrap it up for there today. Wrap it up there for today is what I meant to say. That rhymed. Oh, my gosh. We're on a roll here. Thank you guys for joining us here on another episode of Nintendo Noise. Remember, if you want to write into the show, if you want to get involved, if you want to find links to all of our other shows, to our Twitch channel, to our second YouTube channel, to our Patreon, to all the places that you can find content these days, flipscreen.games. It's an easy one to remember. That's the website. Go click the link. Follow us however you choose to follow us. Get involved however you choose to get involved. We appreciate you tuning in for another episode of Nintendo Noise. So, for the crew, I've been Pete, he's been Steve, he's been Chewy. We'll see you next week.
Waves goodbye to the camera.